Welcome to Cuckoo Bananas.
Hello.
Kate.
Howdy, howdy. I'm Mike.
My guy.
Mike. I'm hanging in there.
I like when someone calls you my guy, especially someone you just
my
meet.
My guy is good.
Yeah. Like you go to a deli and you got a they're making a sandwich. You're like, my guy, you want some ketchup on it? And you're like, well, first of all, thank you so much for the term of endearment. And I would like some ketchup on it. People say ketchup is gross on eggs, but in New York, you get a bacon, egg, and cheese, and people put ketchup, salt, pepper on it all the time. So why is it okay on a bagel? And these are the kind of topics that I'm going to be
having. I don't like it.
One man show.
I'm not a ketchup on eggs gal. I'm a BC, no SPK.
No salt, pepper either? Do you have spice?
I mean, SP is okay.
Yeah.
I do. I spice up my life.
Like the Spice Girls.
On occasion. Right.
Well,
that song did not age well.
Why? Does it have the N-word in it?
No, it's pretty racist, though.
It is?
Yeah.
Without repeating it, what do they say? Who do they offend?
I mean, they don't say a word, but they say, I mean, I'm just going to say the lyric. They say yellow man in Timbuktu.
Ooh.
That's not okay, right?
No, that's not good for anybody.
Right? I feel like that's not okay.
No, that's not okay. It.
Well.
Yeah.
This is a different time.
I know. I was just talking to somebody about how, like, there really was, like, a weird awakening. Because, like, there's a new Scott Pilgrim show, and it tries to, like, fix some of the sexism in the Scott Pilgrim movie. But, like, the Scott Pilgrim movie was in 2009.
Really?
You'd think it came out in 1945. But you look at it and you're like, eesh.
Right? Oh, boy. Yeah, I feel like, you know, we've still got a ways to go on a lot of shit.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I do feel like there was a pretty pretty severe turning point at some point.
Yeah.
We were like, oh, shit.
Yeah. Well, I'm Mike Bongiorno.
So that's nice.
The other person speaking is...
He's Kim. Mike Bongiorno.
No, we don't. We decided not to do that anymore. You're
boy, I sure am.
Where this is Cuckoo Bananas. This is a podcast about mental health from I don't know a lady with bipolar and a guy with OCD, anxiety, GAD. I think we both got a nice patina of addiction in our blood.
Just for good measure.
Yeah. You know, I dealt with. Do you ever? And I'm only asking you to set up my own story. But do you ever dissociate?
Oh, all the damn time. It's a running joke in my family. It's a running joke in my family that I'm not ticklish because I'm too good at dissociating.
First of all, that's incredible. It only happens to me when I travel. Like, I'm not a good traveler because, like, on day two, my ego dissolves and I'm not myself anymore and I don't know who I am or what I feel or I have no history. Like, when I'm home
in
my element, I'm fine. But then, like, out, you know, anywhere. I took a little trip last month in October to the Poconos, which was a lovely trip. And, but like day three, my girlfriend Jen was like, are you all right? And I was like, I'm a little depressed, but also I'm coming undone because I'm not.
But also, I don't know who I am.
Yeah, because I'm not in my element. It's kind of wild. Like, and I remember years ago, I went to England and I went alone. And I remember one point being like, I could do anything. Like, I'm not me here. I could do things that me wouldn't do.
Right.
Like, real crazy thinking. So as much as like
I think I feel uninhibited when I'm traveling. I think I feel very free. I don't feel so tied down to my environment. It's interesting that like for you it seems that you feel that there's a lot of your identity that's tied to your environment.
I think as much as I like want to travel in my life, I think in my heart I'm a real house cat. And I'm also I'm also a real city mouse. Like when we were in the Poconos, Poconos is it's not far from New York City. You know, it's like a 2-hour drive or something. But you know, everything closes at like 7 and you know, there's no lights on the roads and people are driving a million miles an hour. It's just insane. And then like at one point we got to like a main street where there was like stores and we were both like, oh thank God. Thank God there's bricks here. Like
what a relief.
I need structures like that. Yeah. Yeah. So my identity comes
undone. Accessibility and I get that. I think I get that. I mean, it's not, I don't share that experience, but I think I understand what you're saying. It's interesting to me.
It takes days to get it together too.
Yeah. It's interesting because it just makes me think about the way I travel.
Uh-huh.
The way I travel, it's also like an ongoing joke with anybody I travel with. The minute I get wherever I am, I unpack. And like, I put my stuff in the drawers and I set up the vanity in the bathroom. Like I nest, yeah. I make it feel homey. Yeah. Wow. Like that's my first step whenever I travel anywhere. And I think there's a part of me that maybe it's like a, you know, because I moved around and stuff a lot, I don't know, that I want to be able to just make home wherever I am.
Yeah, yeah.
So I just try to like carry that with me.
No, that's great. I would love to be able to do that. That's a good way of like being. I like find like I'm like tied to like at one point I found that reading when I would read, I'd like reread books that I've read before. At night, I was right. Like, that would help me. And at one point, we were staying in like a fancy old manor, beautiful house. And we kind of had to run of the place for a day or so. And like, there was like a meditation room and a spa room and all. It was just beautiful. We were just us in this gorgeous, like 100 years old house. And I was just like, I was like, I need to go sit in the other room and watch Adventure Time on my laptop. Because I don't know who the fuck I am right now.
Right?
And I need to do something that Mike does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I understand that. I enjoy the liberation of travel and of being myself somewhere else and, like, doing new things. But I also, I can understand the comfort of, like, your own space and the anxiety of being in new spaces and having to react to different stimuli than you usually do and stuff like that. Like that can be really overwhelming. And I think it makes sense that, you know, perhaps that has an effect where you're like, hey, you know what? Maybe I'll just leave my body for a bit and just not go through this.
Yeah. Yeah. Some people like they love the idea of ego death. They do what they can to get it. For me, I don't know.
Yeah.
I feel very unmoored.
Yeah. It's actually something that I've talked about a lot in therapy and I've talked about with my doctors because like I do it very often and I think I've done it a lot since I was a child. And it started as a kid for me with this obsession of how do I look while I'm doing something?
Interesting.
How am I being perceived by somebody else while I'm doing X, Y, or Z? Like that was a thought that was kind of behind every thought for me for a very long time growing up. And I think it led me to not really be present because I was thinking more about of like what would this look like if it were, say, like the movie of my life or something like that. Like I always was kind of removing myself from what I was experiencing before I was realizing that that was a coping mechanism.
Right.
You know, I was doing that.
That's so fascinating. It's like it's like this performativity.
Right.
Wow, that's really interesting. And that in that way, so in that way you were dissociating.
Wild. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's how I learned to. I think that's, you know, where my body learned to just like all right, we can detach the body and mind for this experience if we don't want to experience it, or if we think perhaps that there's a, so this is going to be a little hard to explain, but maybe like wanting to do a certain thing but worried that it would be perceived incorrectly. So just separating those two things, what I want to do and the way I will be perceived when I'm doing it.
Uh-huh.
Does that make sense? Okay, you can follow that. All right. But so I think that was maybe the first form of dissociating I was doing as a kid, you know?
You said it was like a coping mechanism. What were you in those moments like leaving?
It's hard to say. I think probably most often just feeling rejected or like I didn't belong somewhere, you know, which I think is a common thing for little kids to feel. I think most children are kind of lonely.
Yeah. Especially like smart, like stuck in their head kids.
Yeah, like precocious kids. Like it's hard out there.
Right, right. Let me ask you, were you the kind of kid that was always like, when you were really little, like trying on identities? Like so many times I was like this is sounds like a joke. One time I was in the Disney store. No, I was in the Warner Brothers store. And
yeah.
I got a cowboy hat. And the cowboy hat had Tasmanian Devil on it. And I didn't just buy a cowboy hat. For like a week, I became a person who wears cowboy hats. I was like, this is my thing. This will inform every other part of my personality now. I'm going to buy all sorts of, I don't know what you call, Western gear or whatever. For like a week, and then I stopped. Mm-hmm. And I was always doing shit like that. Like, always. Like, I'm this, I'm that. I'm goth for a week. For a week, you know, I'm, you know, God knows what. You know,
always. But you know what? I think I still do that.
Okay.
And I think that maybe that's just how we experience stuff. Like, I think maybe that's okay. I went through this thing where I was concerned that, like, because I'm a little bit different around different people, am I being authentic still?
Interesting.
And I believe I still am being authentic. I think mm-hmm. that when you are with other people, we're so multifaceted. We're more multifaceted than I think even we give our own selves credit for. And different people and situations bring out things in us. So like maybe there's some part of you that is Western guy and you got to be that guy for a week because there is some part of your persona that wanted to do that. And right. That's not like you weren't being a poser and you weren't like you were doing your thing at that point.
Right, of course. Yeah,
and
no. I think, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I feel like I still do that. I get super into a hobby and that becomes everything, you know, whatever my life is centered around for the next however long. You know.
No, you're hyperfixate. Right. I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing. I just think it's funny when it's something really frivolous, like a cowboy hat.
Sure, like a cowboy hat, like basing your personality on a cowboy hat.
But recently, I'm 40 goddamn years old, and just recently I had a thing where at work there was like a staff meeting, and it wasn't because of me, but there was a conversation about like dress code. It was because somebody came to work in like green spandex tights or whatever. So it was about someone else, but I wear almost exclusively t-shirts, graphic tees. I have like two shirts with buttons on it, and I've worn nothing but graphic tees for over a decade. And then when I was like, oh, I guess I have to buy, you know, button down shirts or collared shirts for work. And that fucked with me. I was like, but I wear t-shirts. Like, I remember one time my brother was
right.
My brother was like, you're like Frank from 30 Rock with the different hats. It's like, what's today's shirt?
Yes.
And I used to sometimes theme a shirt to things. And I would almost never like go look at the shirt. Like, it was just wear it. And it's sort of like, it was a weird affectation. Like, and now I kind of had that, oh my God, who am I if I'm not wearing t-shirts every day.
If I'm not in a graphic tee.
Yeah, that is part of the me I've constructed. Maybe I think right. I think when you're older, you get to a point where you've cobbled something together. You know what I mean? Like, I was like 9 when I became right. a cowboy guy. But now at 40, like, I have a bunch of things that I'm that guy.
Yeah. See, and I know that I've seen this circulating on the internet in some format. But like, we're just like a patchwork of all the people that we've met and then all the music we've listened to, every film we've seen, every book we've read. Like, we take all the things that we like best yeah. from all of that, and we build a person out of it.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I think that's an especially, like, maybe also a people-pleasing thing. I think yeah. people who are people-pleasers are inclined to do that, too. To look at, you know, right. what does everybody like? What can I take from this and that and the other thing that pleases everyone? Yeah.
I mean, like, things like gender theory talk about stuff like this. Like, what is gender? It's something that, like, we're all, well, not all of us, but it's something that a great many of us are, like, constructing and buying into at the same time.
Right.
Fascinating. All right, let's shift gears real quick. So what's,
let's do it.
What's grinding your gears? What's going on with you? Things okay?
I'm doing a lot better now than I've been doing recently. I've been feeling very overwhelmed, and I was off my medication for a little while because I still am undiagnosed, but firmly believe I have ADHD. And one of the hardest things for me to do is to keep up with taking my meds. And then it gets to a point where I've missed them so many days in a row that I'm like, well, what's the point of taking them? So recently started back up and have been feeling better. But for a while there, it was bleak.
So you said the ADHD, like, is it forgetting? Is it literally just like your mind's not on it, so you don't take it? Or is there like something in you that like just doesn't want to take it?
I'm sure there's a very scientific explanation for this, and that someone with the proper education could explain this so succinctly. But I set an alarm for my medication, and if it goes off and my medication isn't right next to me, I don't take it. I hit snooze. And then I hit snooze so many times that I don't even know why I'm hitting snooze anymore.
Right.
I'm just dismissing this alarm. And then, like, I haven't taken my meds, and it's like 2 hours past, and I'm like, well, you know, it's too late to take them now anyway. I'm not going to take them.
Okay. Okay. Do you have, like, how many, like, pills do you have a day?
2. It's not going to be that much.
I have, like, 4. 2 in the morning, 2 at night.
I can't fucking manage 2. I'm taking vitamins also, so now I'm taking more stuff.
Well, I would recommend, and it's going to make you feel very old, but I would recommend one of those things
that I know what you're going to say.
The days of the week on it.
Days of the week. Okay. You know what?
Down and fill them.
Yeah.
It makes it easier.
A friend of mine shared today a cute little one she got, which I think maybe will encourage me if I get like a cutesy one.
You're artistic. You know, if I get like a plain one and like make it fancy, paint it up. It
cute. Well, like the one she had a button in the middle, and she hit the button and the pills would spin. And I really think that that would please me. Yeah, I really think that that would do wonders for me. I'd be like, oh, I get to take out my cool little pill container. Yeah. Like, I would love that.
Do it. Do it.
Yeah, I think it's time. It's I'm going to check, you know, Prime Day, Black Friday deals on pill cases.
As life goes on, you acquire more pills that you got to take, whether it be for your body or your mind or both. I just don't want to be, and I don't know why I've made this the like bridge I don't want to cross, but I don't want to be on cholesterol medication. To me, that's the that's not just a sign that you're old, but a sign that you're old and refuse to do something, be healthy for yourself. It's like I refuse to eat right, so I'm gonna take Lipitor, whatever it is. And like, it seems like every boomer takes, like, everybody over a certain age just takes it, and it's like, I don't want to be there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's also, I think that's an addiction thing too. I think it's very hard for people who are addicted to certain kinds of foods and stuff like that to change their habits. And so it's a lot easier to just say, all right, I'll take the pill instead.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about something good. What's going on that's positive in your life, in your world?
So I want to talk about something.
Oh boy. Yes.
That's, it's big. It's something that you know about me, but something that I'm not like public about. So this is the first time I'm saying that publicly.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm polyamorous.
No, I knew
this. So yeah, I know, right? Shocking. So my husband and I date other people other than each other. And you know, it's just refreshing to be at a place where I can talk about that.
Okay.
Openly and not really fear, you know, judgment, and to be comfortable with whatever kind of conversations that brings on for me and Like I'm very comfortable where I am, and that's really, really good. That's been really, really good for me.
From what I understand, you've had like a polyamorous sort of agreement with your partner for a couple years, and probably always in your heart you're polyamorous. So what makes right now the point where you're like, I can talk about it?
So I realized I was polyamorous personally about 7-ish years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I told that to my husband, and that was a very difficult conversation at the time. And for years, you know, we just kind of did our own independent research. We, you know, did our own work within our own relationship and on ourselves and with one another and all that good stuff. And it got to a point around 2 years ago where it was just like, you know, there's never going to be a time where it says, okay, now you can go. Like now it's time to start. You know, we make the rules. That's something that I say all the time when it comes to all of this stuff. In any relationship, like, you get to make the rules, you get to decide what works for you and what doesn't. And there was a point where I was like, all right, like, it's time to go. It's time to just, like, I don't know, what's the phrase? It's time to just, like, hit the gas or whatever. You know, however you want to say it. Like, it was just time to take the leap. So that was maybe around 2 years ago. And polyamory wasn't a thing that I really knew existed, because it's not something that, you know, most people are exposed to. And I remember learning about it years ago and being like, hey, that's how I love. Like, that's how I feel about it. Like, that's, the way that I put it to explain it to friends is like, I don't think that my love is like a pie that I've got a set amount of slices to give out. I have an oven. I could just keep making pies.
Interesting. Okay. Okay.
Like, there's no love that takes away from anybody else's love that I don't see it as something that's divided and given up.
So you don't feel like you love your husband any less. You just feel like
Not at all. You
have an endless well of love.
Yeah. In a lot of ways, it's brought my husband and I closer together, because we have to communicate so much. Like, that's something that people underestimate with polyamory. Like, a lot of people just, like, roll their eyes and like, oh, that's a weird sex thing or whatever. That's not.
Right. I mean, that's what people... It doesn't have... Like, more people know, like, the term polyamory now. But, like, it doesn't have great PR as of yet.
No. And also, people confuse polyamory and polygamy a lot, and they think of, like, you know, sister wives and like men who have tons of wives, and it's not like the wives are out there having other relationships, and, you know, very different things.
Yes, that is what people think. I'm trying to think. So you and your partner both see other people?
Yes.
See, the thing I always think about is, like, what if the decision is made and then only one person does it, and the other person maybe tries and fails?
No. See, that's the thing, is when we had the conversation, and, you know, the finally pulling the plug. I'm just going to keep trying to think of different phrases.
Hitting the bricks.
You have to take into account that, like, you have to take into account that, like, now you're involving other people. And sure. People are not dismissible or disposable. And this is not, like, some fad or phase where it's like, you know what? This isn't for me. I'm done. Like, that's not how it works if you're being ethical about it. Like, you can't use other people as things to experiment with. And that's something that's difficult dating as a polyamorous person, because a lot of people see me as a no-risk person to date, because it's like, well, you know, she's got other relationships. And that's bullshit, because I'm not an experiment to see if you can do, quote-unquote, polyamory.
So, yeah, because what I'm, like, if I were to date you, right, I would think, even if I didn't think of it that way, like you said, where it's like, oh, well, no expectations, I would think, well, she's married, so I have to be number two. Like, there's the number one who's there. I've got to be supplemental.
Right.
That's the way I would see it. If I had someone who had not just a partner, but like someone they were married to.
Right.
That's like and wrong. Or
you
that's
know, there are people. So there are different, you know, same way there are people who believe differently in any faction of anything. But there are people who believe in a hierarchical structure for polyamory. I do not. I don't. I acknowledge that, like, my husband is the person I'm married to. We made a legal commitment to one another. We have children together, which is a commitment beyond. We've spent, you know, a significant amount of our lives together. We are fully committed to one another for life. He is my best friend. He is the love of my life. You know, like, that doesn't change any of that. But I'm still, like, I'm conscious about not ranking his feelings about something before someone else's, or you know, considering his preference before someone else's, like, or previously discussing things with him before I bring it up to somebody else. Or I try to really respect each of my relationships completely equally, while acknowledging that they are different, and that excuse me, my relationship with my husband is just inherently going to be more important because of all the things we share. We share a home, we share a family, we share a history, and we always will. So I understand that, you know, there are things that will just make that relationship a priority in certain ways. But it's not to say I prioritize the individual more, if that makes sense.
So then, when you're dating somebody who isn't your husband, is the possibility for that still open for that person, that they can become more important to you, that you might want to live with them, you might want to marry them?
Ideally, the situation that I hope for is something that's called kitchen table polyamory. Mm-hmm. And it's essentially named that way because everybody can sit around the table together. And it's where, you know, even if people aren't romantically involved with one another, everybody gets along, everybody can be together. I would be open to living with other people. You know, I don't think I would seek to marry anyone else. I'm definitely not at this point or any point in the foreseeable future having any more children.
Would you ever, you and your husband together, date somebody?
Yes.
Okay.
My husband and I do have someone that we date in common, but we don't, like, you know, we've done some stuff together, the three of us, like, we'll go out together or go bowling or something like that. But it's not exclusively something, you know, it's always the three of us. He's out right now.
Right. Some people do that, I think. Well, you know, there's a lot of reasons. I'm sure people do that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There are people who do that unethically, and they are called unicorn hunters. And it's, you know, the people who are seeking a third to spice up their marriage and such, and who see that person as just, you know, that.
Well, is it unethical if that person, like, knows that?
No. So that's the thing. It's like, it's kind of a polarizing topic in the poly community, but like, that's how I feel about it, which is, you know, odd to me, but a controversial kind of take, because it's supposed to, unicorn hunting is always unethical, but like, if somebody wants to be a quote-unquote unicorn, if somebody literally just wants to meet up with this couple and do whatever and be treated as like the third in a couple, like, then it's fine. If everybody's consenting and excited about it, like, then it's all good,
right?
I'm thinking in my situation. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I'm thinking of questions that I don't know the answers to. And I'm also thinking of questions that I think someone might ask, someone older might ask.
Sure.
So I'm not trying to be insulting. I hope you don't take it that way.
I won't. You know, it's funny. I've come out as polyamorous to some people at work. And, you know, I'm always open to questions. And, you know, I know it's not for everyone. And that tends to be the first response everybody gives you. It's not when someone finds out I'm polyamorous. The moment, I wish I was taking a tally. Every person I tell I'm polyamorous, I could never do that. I'm not trying to sell you on it. Right, you know what I mean? It's literally just something that I am. Like, I'm not trying to tell you, okay, that's fine that you could never, you know? And it feels like that's something, and I understand that monogamy, I think, you know, I think
it could be passive aggressive. I could never do that.
Sure. But I think I don't think it's always ill-intentioned. I think monogamy is so ingrained in us.
Yeah, yeah.
As a culture. And like, I know that a lot of people aren't exposed to the idea of polyamory and have never seen healthy displays of polyamory. And if you're not exposed to that, of course you could never. You know, and it's not that I think anybody who is exposed to healthy polyamory is going to realize they're polyamorous. There are people who are just monogamous, and that's cool too. But like,
yeah,
it's strange that that's one of the first responses from everyone is like, oh, I could never. All right, that's fine.
It's interesting because the way that you described it to me, let me say I could never, But what's interesting, though, is the way you describe it to me. I know I could see the difference in us because I feel like I've got, like, so much love and I want to give it to my partner and I got no more than that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I love that so much and then I...
And that's a normal... Right. Yeah, that's a normal and perfectly fine way to feel, and everybody's different. The same way people are different in their sexuality and stuff. I think people are unique in their styles of loving and we just don't, like, make room for that as much as a society as I think we could and probably should.
Well, that's the other criticism too, right? Because I bet a lot of people think it's just weird sex stuff. Like, they don't think,
totally not.
They think, like, they don't, you know, they don't think about love. They think, oh, you like to just, like, fuck everyone.
Right. So you're just, like, a big slut. Which, like, sure, maybe I am a big slut, but that's got nothing to do with the fact that I'm also polyamorous. Like, whatever.
Well, so are you currently dating multiple people?
Yes.
And they're all on the same page of like what you know. Okay.
Yeah. Everybody I'm dating has met each other.
Okay. That's fun. Yeah.
It is. It's really nice.
I mean, it sounds like fun. Do you have like dinners?
Yeah.
Okay.
We've done that. Yeah, it's nice. And I'm hopeful for a better space where everybody can be together and stuff. But my future plans include my other partners too. You know, like, I consider them, they're a fully integrated part of my life. Mm. And they will continue to be, and they'll, you know, continue to get more integrated into my life. And that's, you know, I think part of the appeal to polyamory for me was the fact that relationships can just kind of be whatever they are.
Uh-huh, yeah. Interesting.
I don't have to put pressure on it to be a certain thing. I don't have to have some kind of end goal in mind. I don't have to be trying to define everything. I don't have to worry if I'm attracted to somebody who's my friend. I don't, like, it's all okay. I'm feeling all of it is okay, and it's not a threat to anything else in my life. And I think acknowledging that was really freeing for me, you know?
Yeah. Interesting. Interesting. Yeah, so I kind of feel that way a little.
I can, you know, be more authentically myself, because I can be more open about that. I'm more comfortable. I have partners who I believe deserve to be shared and acknowledged and, you know, celebrated. And mm-hmm. I don't want them to feel like they're hidden.
Right.
You don't have to follow some timeline. You don't have to check off some boxes. Like, you get to just have fun. You, like, this is the only, as you know, as far as I'm going to remember and all that stuff, whatever, we can talk about reincarnation and all that shit. I got one life. I'm not going to spend it being unhappy and trying to do something that doesn't serve me because I think it's right. Because somebody else is trying to tell me that it's right for me to do because that's what you're supposed to do, or that's right. The next step.
Interesting. Okay. I love it. Thanks for bringing it to the podcast. Thanks for bringing it to the table. Thank you.
Thanks for making it a safe space to share it.
That's what Cuckoo Bananas is all about.
Yeah, it is.
So do you have a question for me? Would you like me to ask you a question?
Well, first I want you to tell me what's good with you.
Well, yours was so huge. Mine was just, I mean, like, the simplest shit in the world. Like,
I still want to know it.
Thanksgiving's coming up. Things feel cozy. I don't like that the sun goes down early, but it's nice to read when it's dark. I'm just enjoying the moment right now. I'm just enjoying.
That's great.
I'm enjoying the season. I'm enjoying the cold. I'm liking it.
You're not feeling sucked into any seasonal depression stuff yet?
A little bit, but I've been trying to wake up earlier, which helps. And I do have a therapy lamp, which helps. You know, I try to get out in the sun every day, like even if I'm just like walking somewhere. I think that helps.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, it's only November. I'm sure by January I'll be singing a different tune, but right now I'm holding on and I'm liking it. It is that weird part of the year where I'm like, what time is it? Midnight? Oh, it's 7:15.
Oh, it's 4:30. I at work, when I'm working in the front, the front of my job, I have, you know, is just all windows. Uh-huh. So I just watch the sunset at like 4:30 every day, and it's just, whew.
I hate to say the same things over and over again, but every year, why are we still doing this? Why are we still doing this?
I just don't understand.
It has nothing to do with foreigners. Why do we do it? Nobody needs it. Other countries don't do it. We need to stop doing it.
Nope.
Can we please stop doing it?
Well, I feel like that applies to so many things. We can just apply that statement to so many things we're doing. Why? As a country, society. Why? Why are we so committed to this silly thing we decided to do?
It's funny because I sometimes think like we're in a time loop. Like we are in fact live in the future, but we're not living in the future. Like we've had electric cars for like a long time. Why don't we all have them? Why are we still doing this? Why are we still doing this thing? Like why are we still doing
capitalism?
Right. No, capitalism is a machine that can't turn itself off and only can keep going. Right. Yes. So we live in the past.
Oh, yikes.
Because we're not even the most technologically advanced country. South Korea is the most technologically advanced country. American goes to South Korea and they're like, wow, it's the future here. And it's like, no, that's the present, bro.
No, it's happening right now.
You live in the past.
Oh, boy. Right. My God.
All right. My question
for you.
Oh, no. Give me.
No, you go first then. No, you go.
This is a deep question. It's not deep really, but it's important.
Oh boy.
In your whole life, your whole experience, is there an article of clothing that you once cherished and loved that you lost or disintegrated, and you just wish you could have it back. And if there is a heaven, you get to wear it every day.
Oh my God, so many. There's so many. I think about certain articles of clothing all the time, but there is one that came to mind as soon as you said it. So when I was in probably high school, I had a shirt. My favorite band was Brand New. And I had a shirt and it was like maroon. And it had a city skyline and in like this like turquoisey kind of color, but maybe more cyan. It said Brand Nizzle. It was my favorite shirt. I can still like feel it. I can feel how soft it was. Oh my God. And who knows where that shirt is? Who knows? But I can think of others. Like I had a really cute shirt with Statler and Waldorf on it that I love.
I know. Can't sometimes find I think that. Back and it's like, where the fuck did it go?
Yeah. Where do they go? I don't understand. I for the life of me, I couldn't tell you where these things went. Yeah. Because even if they didn't fit me, they were ones I would have kept.
Yes. I agree. Yeah, I have shirts that don't fit me anymore, but I'm like, I'm not giving up this shirt. This is a totem.
Yeah.
And my Tasmanian Devil hat. Actually, I have no idea where that is, but I wish I still had it.
A relic of an era. If I
just put it on right now?
Oh my God, that would be the...
What an end.
Just really cherry on top. So now I'm a mom, so you know, you gotta save stuff, but like I save my kids like, you know, like certain t-shirts that they loved or like special like holiday outfits or whatever.
Yeah.
And the goal is to eventually like make like a quilt or something of them. But I save like sentimental outfits or, you know, things they really loved.
Nice.
Yeah. My question for you.
Please. All right.
So
you're very tickled by your own questions. I can't wait.
I am, and it's not a funny question. I'm just super awkward. So like when you feel anger, how do you navigate anger toward other people or things? Like, do you yell? Do you cry? Do you start like explaining things, you know, to no end? Like, how do you handle when you're angry? Do you shut down? Do you start talking a lot? Like, what do you do?
That's a great question. If the anger completely like sidelines me and I don't see it coming, I'll get like jokey in a very aggressive way. Like, what the fuck are you doing, bro? Like, what are you doing? What is this? But if I could kind of see it coming, yeah, all right, you've seen You Got Mail, right?
Oh, yes.
Okay, yeah, I just recently rewatched it, and there's a thing where Meg Ryan says, like, I can never think of the right thing to say when I'm angry to somebody, and Tom Hanks is like, I can, but it's not a good power because you'll always feel guilty about it. I'm kind of like the Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
I can be super cutting. Like, I could say something that can cut you apart, and it does feel good in the moment, but I do genuinely always look back and feel bad. Like, I can't believe I said that horrible thing that it's like I put a knife into somebody. I can be very cutting. It's never physical. I've never been like, well, let's go outside. It's always just like cutting and cold. Like, I'll turn more cold. I become James Spader when I'm angry.
Right.
I'm like, now I'm going to.
Fantastic. Fucking love James Spader.
Now I'm going to use my command of the English language to destroy you.
Right.
Okay. But it's not a feeling I feel a lot. Mostly the anger is turned inward toward myself.
Okay.
Like, I'm not like someone who drives around and gets road rage. Like, look at this fucking asshole. Like, right. I don't get angry a lot.
And then when
people are angry at me sometimes, I'm like, I get it. I got out of my car and I left the door open for I don't know what reason. So my door was just open in the street and somebody came by and honked. Like, what the fuck are you doing? And I went, I don't know. I can't believe it too. Just fully agreed with him.
This fucking guy.
Because I don't know.
I bet he had no fucking clue what to do. Like,
that guy just agreed with me. I can't believe it either.
Brilliant. I can't believe it either. Perfect. What a perfect response.
Next time somebody's mad, you say that. I can't believe it either. It totally disassociates.
I can't believe it either.
From yourself. Like, that's not you who just did it. Can you believe this?
I can't believe it. Did you see that?
Yeah.
You see this shit?
Or when you go, ah, fuck me, I guess, huh?
Hysterical. I love it. My fuck me is always, oh, mahalo. Because of Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Uh-huh.
When Jonah Hill is like, he's trying to get Russell Brand to listen to his demo or whatever. But he goes like, I'll just go fuck myself, mahalo. So like, anytime a situation calls for I'll just go fuck myself, I'll just be like, mahalo.
That's good. Do you have any recommendations for our audience? For our listeners?
So, yeah. My recommendation, it's another one that's going to be something to do. So something that I think I feel like is trending a little bit. And I did talk about the book, I think, on the last episode, Lessons in Chemistry. And in the book, she, you know, she's a chemist and she applies that to her cooking. And she talks about, you know, giving a nourishing meal and, you know, giving what your body needs. And I think a nice activity to recommend is cooking a nourishing meal for yourself.
Now, what do you mean by nourishing?
So, something that makes you feel good, something that's got some nutritional value for you, that's going to make your soul feel satisfied, that's going to give your body what it needs, that's going to make you feel good.
When's the last time you did that?
Today.
What did you make?
Well, I didn't make a whole meal, but I made mashed potatoes. And I made mashed potatoes from scratch, and I hand-mashed them. And they're for my daughter's class party, so they're not technically for me, but I did have some.
Yeah.
But it was still like a very conscious process, and it was pouring love into it. And I think cooking consciously for yourself or for a loved one is a really nice activity, and I would recommend that.
I went to a potluck today.
Oh, nice. A Friendsgiving, perhaps?
No, it was at work, actually.
Oh, nice.
But it was very lovely. But I'm not really... I could, like, cook little things for myself, but I've never... I don't know how to cook, like, big things. So I just brought
Have you tried? Before you say you don't know how, have you tried?
No, of course not.
Okay.
just I cooked for two. Never more
than
two. So I got donuts.
Okay.
But I loved everyone else brought stuff. There are three
vegetarians
that work with me, the two besides myself. But because everyone was being super self-like...
So you got options.
Yeah, everybody... There was more vegetarian food than there were vegetarians because everybody was being thoughtful. It was really nice. And oh my God.
That's so sweet.
Someone I work with made like pigs in a blanket, but it was actually carrots. But they were marinated in something that made them taste like hot dogs. Oh my God, it was so good.
Ooh. That sounds delicious.
It looked like a paint on blanket, and then I bit it, and then I saw the orange, and I was like, you son of a bitch. You got me.
You got me. That's awesome.
That's a good recommendation. Okay. My recommendation is a book. It is called It Never Ends, A Memoir with Nice Memories by Tom Sharpling. It's by Tom Sharpling, who, if you don't know, he is a radio host. The Best Show is, and he's a comedy guy. He wrote for the show Monk, and he wrote for What We Do in the Shadows. He's the voice of Steven Universe's dad on Steven Universe. So he's like a comedy guy. But this book, he tells his story, but he also opens up about that he went through... Oh gosh, I forget what it's really called. I hope you know. They used to call it electroshock therapy. They don't call it that anymore. It's
Oh, I don't know. I wish I knew what it was.
I want to say it right because they don't call it that anymore. I'm going to Google what we call it. What do you call?
What do you call it?
Electroshock therapy. Okay, ECT, electroconvulsive therapy. So he went through electroconvulsive therapy, which he feels saved his life. But the side effect is he lost big chunks of memory. So in his memoir, he'd be like, this is what I can remember, but some of it's completely gone. It was funny. It was inspiring. It's a really good read.
It sounds delightful.
It is. Do you know anybody who has gone through ECT?
Yes, I do. I have a friend who was doing it successfully for a while.
I've only heard success.
I don't know if that's something you do. Yeah, I don't know if it's something, I'm not, you know, familiar enough with it to know, like, how long you're supposed to do it and how often and whatever. But I know there was a time a while ago where, you know, she was very pleased with it while she was going through with it.
Yeah, I had a friend who was, had bad suicidal ideation and it was helping her.
Yeah, yeah.
But hey, right now is a great time to say that this is a podcast not hosted by professional mental health care people. Sure. Therapists or psychiatrists or psychologists. So don't take any advice from us. We're not giving you any advice. We're just talking about our own cuckoo-ness. Well, Kate, I believe the hour's up.
I think the hour's up. I think that's all time.
Yeah, right. No, it's actually been an hour. If this were therapy, it would end in 45 minutes. A medical hour is 45 minutes.
Yeah, some bullshit.
Well, Kate, have a lovely Thanksgiving. This episode will come out the Monday after Thanksgiving. So I hope everyone listening had a good Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
And if you don't celebrate that, I
hope
you had a good
Thanksgiving to you.
If you got a day off.
Yeah, I hope you enjoyed a nice day off and maybe had some good food, even if it's not, you know, for any particular reason.
Yeah, I always have Italian food on. I never eat Thanksgiving food. We go out.
I'm not crazy about the Thanksgiving food, to be completely honest. It's not my favorite, but whatever. Here we are.
All right, everybody. We'll see you next time. Bye.
Till next time. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye.